Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smithsonian Magazine program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I just received the April-May 2025 issue of the Smithsonian, so I'll begin with the first article, In Search of Siddhartha, the legendary birthplace of the Buddha in Nepal, beckons worshippers from around the world, and archaeologists hoping to uncover new evidence about the revered spiritual leader. By Jeffrey Barthollet. Shortly after dawn, more than 200 monks from an order of Tibetan exiles carry carefully bundled scriptures and 108 gold gilt Buddha statues in a long procession toward the site revered as Siddhartha Gautama's birthplace. Some monks beat drums or wave sweet incense. Some wear ritual crowns or hold elaborately tasseled umbrellas. Some play brass and copper dung chin or longhorns, which vibrate with an eerie rumble that is said to resonate with the otherworldly beauty of the Buddha's teachings. The parade arrives at a large white building of brick and steel. Most of the monks circumambulate the building, walking past a polished sandstone pillar placed here in the 3rd century B.C., and along the edges of a pond where it is said that Maya Devi, Siddhartha's mother, bathed herself before childbirth. A smaller group of senior Tibetan monks enter the building. There, standing before a 4th century A.D. bas-relief of Maya Devi, giving birth, and above an ancient marker stone that is said to identify the precise nativity spot. The men conduct a purification ritual, offering a symbolic lamp of wisdom to dispel forces of ignorance from the Buddha's birthplace. In an area outside the temple building, known as the Sacred Garden, monks from many other lands are gathering in the early morning light, some in saffron robes, others in burgundy. They come from Nepal and Vietnam, India and Thailand, Sri Lanka, Japan, and many other countries. Gray and black-clad monks from China hold aloft an undulating blue and gold dragon. A smattering of Buddhist nuns is present too, many dressed in pink or white. On a meditation platform, devotees from countries and territories that are bitter political rivals sit shoulder to shoulder to chant mantras for peace. Lobsang Lama, a Nepali layperson, hands out crisp 10-rupee notes, the equivalent of about 8 cents, to each of the seated monks and nuns. "We believe in cause and effect," he says. "What we give, we will get in the next life." The monks, nuns, and pilgrims have gathered in the stiflingly hot town of Lumbini, near the border with India, because this is the day when the Buddha's birth is celebrated here in Nepal, and because Buddhists believe this place has sacred power. But they are not the only people seeking the Buddha in Lumbini. Archaeologists have been searching here for an altogether different Buddha, not the figure of faith and metaphor, but an actual man who was born, lived, preached, and died in this region at least a century before any records of his teachings were written down. They've been digging for artifacts in the area identified as his birthplace, and also in an area of buried ruins 17 miles away, which the archaeologists believe was the site of the ancient town of Kapilavastu, Siddhartha's childhood home. What they are finding, and what they are still hoping to find, could be important to practicing Buddhists, who still debate among themselves when exactly the Buddha lived. The findings could also shed new light on when and how Buddhism spread throughout Asia. Economic interests are also at stake. A developing country like Nepal would like to boost pilgrimage and tourism to sites identified with the Buddha's story, and new finds and revelations are likely to attract more visitors. And yet the discoveries to date and the theories about them are controversial, and they come at a time when there is renewed scholarly debate about whether a man named Siddhartha Gautama ever existed at all. Even among believers, the Buddha is a figure who takes on different forms depending on the observer. Among secular Buddhists in the United States, he's often regarded simply as an enlightened teacher, a person who, through discipline and deep meditation, gained remarkable insights into the human condition and gave instructions for how people can tame and channel their minds to reduce the stress of living. In Asia, where Buddhism is practiced in a bewildering array of different schools and lineages, each with its own traditions and rituals, he's often a more magical figure, someone who could levitate and fly long distances, subdue dragons and demons, project duplicates of himself in space, and travel to astral realms. There is no definitive scriptural text that lays out the full story of the Buddha's life. As John S. Strong, an emeritus scholar of religious studies at Bates College, writes in his 2001 book, The Buddha, A Beginner's Guide, each Buddhist telling and retelling of stories about him has been influenced by historical recollections, doctrinal emphases, ritual concerns, political allegiances, social and cultural factors, or simply the desire to weave a good tale. Such yarns differ in their particulars, often contradicting one another, but they generally follow a pattern, including key episodes regarded as inspiring and worth recalling, whatever their grounding in history, Strong writes. As recounted in a very popular form of ancient Buddhist literature called the Jataka Tales, the Buddha first appears many eons ago as a man who aspires to become a Buddha, Sanskrit for awakened one. He passes through countless lives and reincarnations as a human, god, and animal, sometimes encountering previous Buddhas along the way. In all of these lifetimes, he is seeking spiritual liberation, but he does not succeed until his final rebirth, which occurs in Lumbini. The story of his birth are fantastical. The future Buddha enters the womb fully formed and resides there in a splendid palace, where he receives deities as guests. In some versions of the story, his mother, Maya Devi, has an auspicious dream of a white elephant entering her body, symbolizing holiness, prosperity, and power. 10 lunar months later, Maya Devi travels toward her parents' home, hoping to deliver there, but she doesn't make it. About halfway through her journey, she stops at a grove or garden in Lumbini, where she takes hold of a tree branch and gives birth standing up. As the story is recorded in key scriptures and depicted in ancient Buddhist work of art, the newborn child miraculously emerges from beneath her right armpit. Like all Buddhists throughout time, he emerges unsullied, stainless, not defiled by water, mucus, blood, or any impurity, pure and spotless, according to the Mahapandana Sutta, or Great Discourse on the Lineage. He lands in the hands of devas, celestial beings, or in a golden net held by the devas, and then is placed on the ground, where he immediately takes 7 steps, each marked by a sprouting lotus flower. "I am supreme in the world," he declares. "This is my last birth. Henceforth, there will be no rebirth for me." Mayadevi dies 7 days later, and Siddhartha is raised by his father, King Suddhodana, and his mother's sister, Mahaprajapatati Gautami, in a nearby city called Kapilavastu. Sages counsel the king that Siddhartha will grow up either to be a universal monarch or a supreme spiritual leader. Hoping to tip the scales in favor of worldly rule, the king keeps his son sheltered from the woes of the world. Siddhartha lives in a pleasure palace, surrounded by attendants and beautiful women, unexposed to the perils and sufferings of life. According to tradition, at 16 he marries the lovely Yasodhara, who eventually gives birth to a son they name Rahula, which tellingly means fetter or obstacle. Sometime later, however, Siddhartha, with the help of the gods, emerges from his compound and encounters 4 key scenes: an old man, a sick man, a corpse, and a traveling ascetic. The 3 signs make him deeply aware of the inevitability of suffering and impermanence, Strong tells me, and the 4th gives him hope that there is a solution. At the age of 29, having resolved that he must seek a remedy for life's suffering, he shaves off his hair, sheds his royal garb, puts on the yellow robes of a monk or beggar, and begins his long journey to attain enlightenment. At first, he lives a life of extreme self-denial, which nearly kills him. Then he turns toward a middle way, avoiding extremes of both indulgent pleasure and self-mortification. He endures many challenges during his journey, including assaults from a deity named Mara, often characterized as an evil demon, who tries to deter and detract him. But Siddhartha finally achieves the spiritual awakening he seeks and lives to the age of 80. Western scholars regard most or all of this tale as a myth, a story that evolved over centuries and is more concerned with spiritual meaning than historical accuracy. The Buddha would likely have spoken a language called Magadhi Prakrit, a vernacular relative of Sanskrit that is now dead. During his lifetime, there was no written script. No accounts of his life were transmitted orally for generations before they were written down. The earliest Buddhist texts were probably written in Pali, Sanskrit, and other closely related languages. Translations and editions followed in Tibetan, Chinese, and other tongues. The stories grew and morphed, elaborating on the Buddha's birth, his supernatural powers, the presence of spectral creatures and demons, and hagiographical descriptions of places and events. Textual scholars have tried to separate the reliable from the incredible. In the 19th century, some scholars suspected that the Buddha was an entirely mythical character. The stories in the scriptures seem so exaggerated or fabricated as to be unreal, and they were often read as allegories. In the 20th century, however, a consensus emerged that a historical Buddha likely did exist. Among other things, inscriptions from the 3rd century BC were discovered that directly referred to him, including the pillar at Lumbini, and it seemed easier to imagine a man who morphed into a myth than a series of myths and beliefs coalescing around an imaginary man. Such scholars sought to strip away the exaggerations of the biographies so as to demythologize the tradition and come to an understanding of the real Buddha, Strong writes in his biography. In this, they mirrored to some extent the rational, pacifist quest for the historical Jesus, being undertaken by some of their contemporaries in biblical studies. Still, disagreement over even the most basic facts, like the century in which the Buddha lived, continued. The debate erupted again in 2017 when a Canadian scholar, David Drews, of the University of Manitoba, published an article in the Journal of the International Association of Buddhist Studies, a leading publication that argued that there was no solid evidence for the Buddha's historical existence. Though the Buddha is universally agreed to have lived, Drews wrote, more than 2 centuries of scholarship have failed to establish anything about him. We are thus left with the rather strange proposition that Buddhism was founded by a historical figure who has not been linked to any historical facts, an idea that would seem decidedly unempirical and only dubiously coherent. That article provoked strong criticism from other scholars, some who disagreed with Drews and others who thought the argument was irrelevant, that nothing could be proved about a person who lived before anything was recorded in writing, and that the stories were culturally and spiritually meaningful, whether or not the Buddha was an actual man. The world's most famous living Buddha, the Dalai Lama, has called for more research into the Buddha's life. I personally feel it is quite disgraceful that nobody, not even Buddhists, know when our teacher actually lived, the Tibetan leader wrote in his 2012 book, The End of Suffering and the Discovery of Happiness. I have been seriously considering whether some scientific research could be done. Relics are available in India and Tibet, which people believe derive from the Buddha himself. If these were examined with modern techniques, we might be able to establish some accurate dates, which would be very helpful. Yet some believers question why scientists are so determined to dig up the past, and whether they might come to incorrect conclusions that disturb the Buddhist faith. There's also potential conflict between conservationists who want to protect archaeological sites by limiting visitors and commercial development in the area, and politicians who want to generate more commerce and income, serving the needs of Nepal's impoverished people. Nowadays, where there's a Buddha, there's a dollar, says Basanta Bhadari, a Nepali archaeologist who worries that an influx of visitors will bring harm to fragile and irreplaceable ruins. When Bhadari first came from New Delhi to Lumbini in 1985, a dozen years before it was designated a World Heritage Site by the United Nations, the place felt neglected. Very few people used to come, he recalls. They'd come for a few hours with a lunchbox from across the border in India and return the same day. The electricity, which also came from India, was so weak it could take a full minute for the fan to make one rotation. Venomous snakes were common. They used to like to hide under the pillows, says Badari. We'd use a stick to pick up the snake and toss it aside. Today, an area called the Lembini Cultural Municipality, which was formed in 2014 and combines 7 rural villages, is home to more than 80 hotels, mainly serving pilgrims from the region. Dusty shops and stalls sell baby Buddha statues, singing bowls used for meditation, and other religious objects, as well as colorful stuffed animals and plastic toys. The streets are populated by bicycle rickshaws, tuk-tuks, motorcycles, cars, vans, tractors, stray dogs, and the occasional cow. The municipality's residential and commercial sections surround a pilgrimage area that comprises 3 zones of about 1 square mile each. The sacred garden where the Buddha's presumed birthplace and other archaeological treasures are located, a monastic zone bisected by a pedestrian walkway and boat canal, which features temples and meditation centers of many different nationalities, and the cultural center and new Lembini village, which includes a museum and International Research Institute of Buddhist Studies, a world peace pagoda, and a crane sanctuary. The Baharahawa Airport, serving the area, was expanded in 2022 to handle international flights, and a new meditation and conference hall with a 5,000-person capacity opened the same year. After a tourism lull during the COVID-19 pandemic, the number of visitors is rapidly increasing, says Hit Bahadur Tamang, Nepal's Minister of Culture, Tourism, and Civil Aviation. The government of Nepal is ready to welcome millions of visitors to Lumbini. But the area's rapid growth and development has also brought problems. Commercial and residential buildings have sprung up in areas that were supposed to be protected from development. Pollution, largely from cement and brick-making factories, and the open burning of agricultural waste, thickens the air, which has a corrosive effect on exposed artifacts. And the modern brick and steel structure covering the Buddha's birthplace traps humidity, which erodes the ancient ruins. Some centuries-old brick ruins directly next to the birthplace have lost more than a foot in height because pilgrims have taken souvenirs, which they regard as holy relics. When I visited last year, a golden tarp was draped over those remains to prevent further destruction. People are very happy to develop the sites for tourism because they get instant income from that, says Kash Prasad Akarkaya, a Nepali co-leader of recent digs. But they don't consider the carrying capacity of the sites. He and others regard the newly expanded airport as a time bomb. In 2024, UNESCO experts call for Lumbini to be placed on a World Heritage in Danger list, warning that the deterioration of archaeological sites showed an alarming state of conservation. The pilgrimage area was originally imagined as a serene place, a place of nature, a quiet place, a place of worship, all befitting its gravitas, says Michael Croft, a recent UNESCO representative to Nepal. But that sort of ethos is difficult to maintain, given the fact that it's a place that local authorities, for very understandable reasons, want to leverage for the economic development of the province and the surrounding area, which are very, very poor. Delegates of the UN World Heritage Committee, meeting in November, neighboring India in July, decided to give Nepal more time to submit a report detailing urgent measures the authorities are taking to protect the site. An in-danger listing would be an embarrassment to Nepal, suggesting it is incapable of properly managing the sacred areas. And with that, I am afraid we have run out of time today. The title of this article was In Search of Siddhartha, written by Jeffrey Barthollet. This has been the Smithsonian Magazine program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your Sun Sounds reader today. I hope you enjoyed the program. This article was the lead article in the April-May 2025 issue of the Smithsonian. Stay well, stay safe, and have a wonderful week, and keep listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. And if you missed a program you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website, click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then click on Demand Podcasts. You'll see a list of articles available. Hopefully, you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.